Good morning. Lymphogranuloma venereum, or LGV, is caused by the L. cerevars of Chlamydia trachomatis. And compared to other chlamydial strains, LGV causes a much more invasive illness characterized by transient papules or ulcers at the site of infection, followed by inguinal lymphadenopathy, or in the case of people who engage in receptive anal intercourse, anorectal symptoms that can be confused with symptoms associated with other etiologies. Untreated LGV leads to fibrosis, which in turn can lead to lymphatic obstruction. LGV can also result in strictures and fistula. Currently, there is limited availability of specific diagnostic tests for LGV detection. Here are some key events related to LGV. In 2003, there was a cluster of LGV due to the L2 cerevar that was reported among MSM in the Netherlands. In 2005, anorectal LGV was recognized in New York City, and at that time, CDC met the initial demand for laboratory confirmation. Shortly thereafter, the New York State Lab developed a PCR to detect both chlamydia and the L2 cerevar of LGV on anorectal swabs. The following year, the New York City Public Health Laboratory validated a NAT for chlamydia detection on anorectal swabs. The New York City PHL does all NAT testing for public STD clinic patients. And from 2008 to 2011, STD clinic patients who reported receptive anal intercourse were routinely screened for chlamydia by anorectal swab, and those positive specimens were sent from the PHL to the New York State Lab for LGV testing. This graph shows the number of cases that were reported to the health department, citywide cases, from 2002 to 2011. Prior to when laboratory confirmation was possible, either through the CDC or our state lab, there were a smattering of cases that were based on clinical diagnoses. We saw an increase in cases from 2007 onwards. The majority of the cases were reported from STD clinics, about 60% each year. And the peak number of cases citywide was in 2010 when we had about 90 LGV cases, and then there was a drop in 2011, and I'll talk about why that happened in just a minute. When we were routinely testing STD clinic patients for LGV, it was difficult to differentiate LGV from other proctitis on clinical exam, which made laboratory confirmation all the more important. Unfortunately, the results time, turnaround time, was rather lengthy. We were getting results back in about 3 weeks on average. And in the interim, suspected LGV cases were treated with a 3-week course of doxycycline. When we did get those lab results back, we found that LGV prevalence among anorectal chlamydia-positive specimens was about 9%. Unfortunately, in 2011, we had to stop routine testing of STD clinic patients for LGV due to limited resources. The following year, we started a project of batch testing for LGV in order to monitor the prevalence. And this involved going to the PHL and finding archived chlamydia-positive specimens, stripping them of identifiers, attaching a study ID, and sending those specimens up to the state for LGV testing. Over the course of 2011 and 2012, we had 59 anorectal chlamydia-positive specimens that we sent up. In 2014, this was 103. And then in 2015, we had 144 such specimens that we sent for LGV testing, for a total of 306. The objectives of this study were to compare LGV prevalence among male anorectal positive batch specimens to the prevalence that we had measured during the time that we were doing routine testing, and to identify predictors of anorectal LGV at presentation, which could be used to guide presumptive treatment. Our electronic medical record has variables of interest that were collected at the time of patient visit. They included demographics, medical history, sexual behaviors reported by the patients, concurrent diagnoses, symptoms, and clinical findings. In terms of these latter two categories, this is how that information is captured. We have a chief complaint page in the medical record that includes anal and rectal symptoms, and the clinician can check this off and then write any relevant notes in a text box next to it. Similarly, for physical exam findings, we have this rather vague field for anal and rectal symptoms, and the clinician can indicate whether or not those were, those were normal or abnormal, and then also write in some free text. We categorize chief complaint and physical exam findings into categories such as anorectal pain, rectal bleeding, anal discharge, and the other categories that you see here on this slide. This is an example of a patient chart. This is a patient chart on the chief complaint page, and you can see here that the clinician indicated from the checkbox that there were no anal or rectal symptoms reported, nothing in the text box next to it. However, in this free text field, you can see that actually this patient had anal pain, rectal bleeding, and tenesmus, all symptoms associated with LGV infection. We calculated the sensitivity, specificity, positive predictive value, and negative predictive value of anal signs or symptoms among patients with any anogenital symptoms and or findings. So as I mentioned, this batch testing project involved finding archived chlamydia-positive specimens in the freezers, and not in a haphazard way, but not in a completely systematic way, putting those into the batches without real regard to whether or not they were completely representative of all patients diagnosed with anorectal chlamydia in our clinics. And so this first results slide shows that actually those 306 specimens were from patients who were representative of all patients with anorectal chlamydia during a single year during this time period. With regard to race and ethnicity, they were similar, and HIV status, with a small exception that patients whose specimens were included in the batches tended to be just a little bit older. LGV prevalence that we measured during the time of routine testing ranged from 7 to 12%, had an average of 9%. We had 119 LGV cases out of the approximately 1,300 anorectal chlamydia-positive specimens that were tested for LGV during that time. When we look at the batch testing results, we see much higher prevalence, ranging from 14 to 22%, with an average of 16.7%. We had 51 LGV cases out of the 306 that were tested for LGV. If we apply that 16.7% prevalence to the 2,400 anorectal chlamydia-positive patients in our clinics during that time period, we would have expected 400 LGV cases, and a confidence interval around that prevalence estimate that far exceeds the prevalence that we noted during the time of routine testing. Looking at the 51 LGV cases compared to the 255 chlamydia-positive cases who were found not to have LGV, LGV cases tended to be a bit older and of black race. 59% were HIV-positive compared to only 22% of non-LGV cases. They were more likely to report HIV-positive partners. And about half of LGV cases had a history of syphilis documented in the clinic medical records compared with a quarter of non-LGV cases. Factors that were not associated with LGV included numbers of partners, condom use with receptive anal sex, and concurrent diagnoses. A total of 196 patients had anogenital signs and or symptoms at the time of anorectal specimen collection. This was 86% of LGV cases compared to 60% of non-LGV cases, which was a significant difference. Of all, anal symptom was associated with a nine-fold risk for LGV. And of all signs or symptoms that were referable to the anorectum, anal discharge had the highest sensitivity at 59% and reliably predicted LGV infection with a positive predictive value of 67%. Absence of anal discharge by patient complaint or on exam correctly identified 91% of cases who did not have, of patients who did not have LGV. So there are a couple of limitations to this analysis. The New York State assay detects only the L2 serovar. However, we compared the New York State assay with the CDC PCR, which is a quadruplex assay that also detects L1 and L3 serovars, L2 and L3 serovars, and they confirmed all the New York LGV strains as L2. And for more information about this, there was a poster at this conference, Late Breaker 4. As I mentioned, this was also a convenient sample, and convenience sampling has the possibility, of course, of not being generalizable to the rest of our patient population. But as I mentioned, there was actually similarity between patients with specimens that were included in the batch testing and all patients who had anorectal chlamydia in our clinics. In conclusion, we saw increasing proportions of men diagnosed with anorectal chlamydia infections that had LGV, and these men differ from other men that were screened or tested for anorectal chlamydia in several important ways that include age, HIV status, history of syphilis, and chief complaint of anal discharge. These last categories can be used to target LGV treatment, and in our clinics we do use these criteria to inform treatment. Anal discharge is a moderately sensitive and highly specific criterion for targeting presumptive therapy. implications for program include that programs should be measuring anorectal LGV prevalence. And this analysis, really the process of having to extract from open text fields really highlighted the second point, that it's important to add discrete variables, if possible, regarding anorectal symptoms to medical records in order to facilitate the identification and appropriate treatment for LGV. Changing the threshold for treatment can be considered. Programs without resources for anorectal chlamydia NAT or LGV testing may use complaint of anal discharge to guide presumptive treatment. And then in terms of implications for policy and research, it's important to encourage commercial labs to expand the capacity for anorectal chlamydia and LGV testing. The availability of diagnostic tests specific for LGV is critical to improving our understanding of L. cerevar chlamydia and will help us put observed increases into proper perspective. It would be nice to also have the development of lab capacity for LGV testing at non-anorectal sites. The lack of reported penile lesions and lymphadenopathy that has been reported in this country suggests that we may be failing to recognize cases in insertive partners. Alternatively, we're lacking information about modes of transmission of LGV, and further research is needed. Finally, alternate drug regimens for LGV should be tested, as a three-week course of treatment has patient adherence issues and will be, and we don't know whether or not a shorter course would be required, could be required to eliminate LGV infections. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Kelly Jamison and Julie Schillinger, with the New York City Health Department, Bureau of STD Control, and our colleagues at the labs, our public health lab in New York City, as well as the state lab that did all of our LGV testing. And I'll take any questions.
I just had a question. So it seems like some of your results you would have retrospectively that it was LGV. And did you look back into the clinic to see if any people were treated with short courses and how they actually did when they were LGV positive?
We haven't done that yet. That is the next step, is to look at, first of all, the adherence to the recommendations we have for the clinicians now. Are you using these criteria to target treatment, and which treatments are being given, and then exactly like what is going on there, yes.
Good morning. Thank you for this information. I'm from Howard Brown Health in Chicago, and I'm sure we're seeing a lot of patients who have LGV and we're not recognizing them. So I'm really looking for ways to help our clinicians target their treatment for LGV as opposed to just, you know, our standard GC chlamydia treatments. We're involved with a surveillance project with the health department where we'll have specimens sent to CDC, but we don't know how long the results will take to get back to us. So my specific question is about the complaint of anal discharge. Did that include, do you have more information? Are we talking about bloody discharge? Are we talking about other sorts of discharge? Do you have any more information about that?
It's a combination. So it all is very subjective, right? It's what the clinician will write down. And so sometimes we would have anal discharge. Sometimes it would be bloody discharge. They could be really kind of either, but we looked at the sensitivity specificity of each of those separately, and we just saw that any anal discharge, bloody or not, really should be used to guide presumptive treatment.
Thank you.
Sure.
I'm Debbie Richmond from working in Detroit, doing the LGV cases from Detroit that we've been seeing. Just having seen the patients myself, not being a retrospective look at them, one of the main complaints that we've been seeing is constipation. And also patients presenting to other facilities, the ER, GI, and then having diagnostics done, so CAT scans showing lymph nodes enlarged in the abdomen pelvic area, and also rectal mass and ulcerations on colonoscopies. So not as much discharge as you saw in your report that from the patients that I saw that presented with LGV.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Yes, thanks.
Thank you very much. And if I can add one more comment, I mean, for me, working in a clinic where we don't have access to LGV screening, one of the things that we do is that we basically give 21 days of doxycycline to any MSM that presents with any kind of rectal symptoms. It's probably, you know, oversensitive, but we'd rather do that and ignore and have a patient present with potential complications.